This podcast is brought to you by Sega's Napoleon Total War, the newest chapter in the award-winning Total War series. Rated T for teen.
Yeah, well, my mother didn't carry me under her arm like a loaf of bread.
This is the PC Gamer Podcast, episode number 211 for Friday, February 19th. I'm PC Gamer Senior Editor Evan Lottie, and I've got two extremely exciting words for you. Zerg Rush.
Fire StarCraft bat. 2-
Yes.
The StarCraft II beta finally went live earlier this week. We've been digging into it a little bit, despite our very, very exhausting deadlines here at PC Gamer Magazine, and we're ready to talk a little bit about it. But before we get to that, let me introduce our all-star cast of audio guests. Returning to the PC Gamer Podcast in the first time since, I don't know, maybe a few months, Jeremy? I don't know.
At least. Yeah, many months.
Jeremy Williams, everyone.
Thank you. Hi. Thanks. Good to be here.
Glad to have you back on a Friday.
Word up.
We've also got PC Gamer's reviews editor, Dan Stapleton, here.
Up to my eyeballs in reviews at the moment, actually.
It's not a terribly bad situation.
Could be worse. I've had worse things up to my eyeballs.
I'm sure you have. We also have, of course, PC Gamer's editor-in-chief, Logan Decker. Maybe.
We used to have him.
Squirrel enthusiast, Logan Decker.
Why was I introduced third?
I'm going to say it's reverse alphabetical and randomized. I don't know. Sorry. I'll make that change. Andy, edit it. Eric next, I think that's the next step. I don't know.
No, you can introduce Eric in front of me. I mean, if everyone is going to be.
it's totally
why not? Why not? Oh, look, there's the building cleaner dude. let's throw him in there too. Yeah.
I'd even include his middle name and like.
Hey, why don't you read the goddamn phone book and then introduce me? How's that?
All right, we also have the dulcet tones of intern Eric Belsas.
I see your Zerg Rush and raise you 25 siege tanks.
Whoa.
Terrific.
That wasn't dulcet at all.
That was
the least dulcet thing I've heard all day. I'm just saying.
So, see, there's a problem here, and that's that your intern doesn't know what dulcet means.
well, that was supposed to be... So Eric got the... Wow, creative. It's creative, right? The creative's wow.
Wireless wow headset.
Wow headset. And one of its interesting features that is very applicable in a podcast context is it has a voice modulation. I don't know if it's modulation, whatever you call it, like voice swapping based on some of the races and classes within WoW. Is that right?
I thought you said based on some of the racism in WoW.
It sounded like.
Sorry.
It
makes you sound like a racist.
Let's see. So,
can you say something like a blood elf, please?
Yeah, or like a clansman.
Dulcet means covered in bed sores.
Yeah. It's got a little orphan mode.
Oh my god!
Well, I can feel something's out there.
It's completely unrecognizable. Like
this you're talking it about. Just sounds. What it sounds to me like is like it sounds to me like both the police officer going on the internet pretending to be a little girl, and the guy who's like pretending to be a sexual predator or actually is a sexual predator using the evil voice. It's like you got both ends of that equation in one device.
Here's the giant demon mode.
Yeah, there you go.
This is quite possibly the best thing that ever happened in the podcast.
Eric, don't blow that load all at once.
Oh my gosh!
Okay, yeah,
surprises. Well,
we've got 14 more. So.
Oh wow!
Oh no!
You know what? We should just have him do all the podcast in different voices.
Yeah, Eric. Every time you say something, I want to hear a different voice.
Does Talk Radar know about this device?
I'm not sure.
Wow, they would be all over it.
You know, it's worth mentioning this thing also has visuals. If you look at the side of the headphones, they actually glow and they alternate different colors. It's pretty wicked.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fantastic headset.
Yeah. Don't they, like, they glow one color if you're Horde and glow another? Let's just go move forward.
Yeah. You can read about it in our next issue. There you go. Yeah. Plug.
And fantastic. All right, so StarCraft II, which is a huge topic, huge source of excitement for us this week. The beta went live on Tuesday, at least for those of us with keys or access to them. We haven't had a ton of time to put into the beta, of course, because we've been busy wrapping up our 200th issue, which we'll be very happy to tell you all about what's in there next week. But Dan, you and I have played a couple rounds. Obviously the general impression is StarCraft II preserves a lot of, everything good StarCraft I does in multiplayer in terms of balance. And they would obviously get so many people upset if they deviated from that at all. So it's in their interest to really work on polishing what exists. Is that right?
Well, it is a radical change from what it's not StarCraft 1.5. I mean, it is a totally new balance. There's so many new units in there that it is in some ways familiar to StarCraft 1 veterans, but also very new. There are new units in there. You got like the Zerg Corruptor, for example, which is a purely air to air unit that turns enemy air units into, when it kills them, it turns them into stationary turrets that shoot at other air units for a few seconds until it dies. I mean, there's nothing like that in StarCraft 1. So, but at the same time, it also still has Zerglings, Ultralisks, drones. Most of the mechanics are identical to StarCraft 1. The interface is very familiar to StarCraft 1 fans in that it's huge. And it takes up a big chunk of screen space, but it's all filled with useful information when you're going at it. It's a significantly different game, but fundamentally very similar. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, it's fair to say there's a few new mechanics. Every Zerg unit, if I'm correct, can burrow now. That's kind of a pretty
interesting. Not the flying ones.
Not the flying ones, well, of course.
I actually haven't gone in to test that, so I cannot confirm that. I've only played one game as a Zerg so far, and was actually pretty lost because I thought I was going to know what was going on because I had played in like some of the press events, but they've rearranged a bunch of stuff.
I think my greatest surprise so far coming into this, even with maybe 30 or 40 or 50% of the features for Battle.net disabled, you can really see what a robust plan they have for Battle.net in terms of making a very comparable service to Steam and other similar services. Just the interface, the design of it feels very lively. There's lots of cool animation. It kind of like benefits from being focused on only one game in that it isn't as generic and doesn't need to be as multi-purpose. But in terms of
It will have more than one game. It will have Warcraft on it, and it will have StarCraft, Diablo as well, all going through that one Battle.net interface. But I do think that you have a good point in that Blizzard has allocated a lot more attention towards UI design than Valve has in Steam, and especially when Steam first launched, it was very rough, and now it's come a long way, but it's still very utilitarian, not a lot of flash to it. Whereas, and flash in not in the Adobe branded sense, but in Battle.net, it is a kind of splashier kind of interface that but also you can't run it in the background though, like you can with Steam. So it's kind of more in your face in that respect.
But the thing I'm most excited about, and I think. What do people say when you use the name StarCraft, right? They say there's this connotation of it being such a high skill, nuanced game that's, you shouldn't even bother getting into it. It's that difficult. There's so much foreknowledge you need and so much skill and like micro, abilities you need to master to even compete and have a good time. But this matchmaking mode, that they've been talking about for a long time. We haven't really gotten a chance to see it in action. I'm still sort of in the practice ladder, I think it's called, but it really claims that it's going to match you with people of your similar skill level, that there's going to be tiered leagues and it's going to figure out where to put you. And I think people, they need to really market that feature of the game as much as possible to get people interested in being a part of a multiplayer phenomenon. That's really what I see StarCraft as at this point. It's the surest thing to a ticket to a multiplayer phenomenon that you're going to get in years, right? I mean, it's going to be huge.
they're not the first people to try doing, you know, multiplayer skill matching. And like Command & Conquer 3 very recently did you know, something similar. I honestly don't have enough experience with it to determine how successful that was, and it's way too early at this point to determine how successful StarCraft is going to be, because it still needs to compile a bunch of information about how good you are. When you jump in for the first time, you say, you know, I'm either a novice, I'm experienced, or I'm a pro. So it has that information to start with. But there are, you know, stratification is much broader than that. It's going to take a lot of information gathering before it will be able to really accurately pair you with somebody who either is not going to just crush you, or who will not just, you know, be fiddling with their drone while you roll over them. It's a very tricky thing, and RTSs in particular, yeah, I think even more so than shooters, really depend on having somebody of a similar skill level in order to have any fun at all.
Yeah, it's true. And I've got to ask you guys, Jeremy and Eric and Logan, I think you're in the same boat as me. I didn't play the original StarCraft a ton, you know, partly for some of the same reasons I just listed. But are you sort of at this point in a stance where you're seeing it as an opportunity to maybe try something new and get caught up in that feeling of competitive multiplayer space, and maybe it'll be different this time? Or are you put off by it at this point?
I can't wait to get into it, because I didn't back in the day, and probably because I just kept getting creamed. I'm very just a horrible strategizer, and if I had led the American Revolution, we'd still be British, you know? So, yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to getting into it this time.
Just to warn you, though, Logan, and I don't think that experience, like the experience of a novice jumping in and getting their ass handed to them, I don't think that's going to change.
But I'm a little more grown up, and I've cried a lot, I've cried it all out, and I think I'm a little more, stable emotionally.
If you say so.
Yeah. What about you, Jeremy?
I never played it either, but that's just because I've never been any good at RTS games ever. I can't even win the tutorials. And I think of myself as a...
Trouble.
I'm a pretty decent FPS player, but all my skills just went in that direction. I've never, ever won an RTS game against anything. And so, I'm curious about it now, because since... you know, StarCraft came out originally, I've played World of Warcraft at one point in my life, at least really heavily. So now I have this sort of, you know, this love for Blizzard that I didn't before. So I'll probably check it out just for that reason, because I really appreciate their art style, and I'll give it a shot. But I won't be any good at it. I mean, I won't play it, I don't think.
Did anybody play Warcraft 3 extensively on Battle.net?
No.
Not a huge amount, no.
What they did is... So my roommate and I, back when my first year in college, we played it a ton, and we got ranked. And that's how they would decide who you'd play against. So if you were playing with each other, you had a number next to your names, and then you would get paired with another team with us, you know, close to, or sometimes you'd get like a really, really good ranked team, and you know, you'd have to step up your game, and that would be cool. So I wonder if they're going to implement something along those lines in order to do matchmaking.
They're definitely going to have a ladder, but that's kind of separate. I mean, a ranking like that is, you know, it's kind of bragging rights. It's something you, like, ranked players are generally, if they want to try something new, they won't play on the ranked ladder, yeah, because they don't want to screw up their ranking.
Yeah.
It's something that they're very protective of. Whereas the matchmaking is kind of unofficial ranking, where it doesn't show you necessarily all the calculations it's doing to determine how to match you up with anybody. It's a very casual thing, but behind the scenes, it's probably similar technology.
I guess the middle ground between both of this is the friend system, right? I haven't had a chance to try it out at this point because, well, I don't know a ton of people that are in the StarCraft beta yet, but I mean, even simple features that they've included, like the ability to broadcast text to all of your online friends at once and say, hey, come in this game. You want to get something going. It seems like for anybody that is a little unsure, I mean, if you can get a decent group of people together to play at a similar skill level with, then maybe you can have a good time. I'm looking forward to that.
Isn't part of the problem with that, though, you have to be running the client? Whereas with Steam, that's already happening on everybody's PC, because everybody has Steam and you have a ton of games on it or whatever. It's a marketplace. Whereas this is strictly, what, three games? Are you always going to be running that client?
That's definitely true. I mean, it does have cross-communication between, say, Warcraft and StarCraft, but... Yeah, I mean, you would have to be actively looking for a game or track somebody else down elsewhere on another IM or Yeah, that's true.
However, there is no reason you can't just add StarCraft 2 to your Steam list. I mean, that's,
there you go.
Yeah, that's one way you can do that.
Hey, Jeremy, we should play together and see who loses first.
Yeah,
and that would be the winner.
Yeah, actually, on a related topic, I was talking with the editor over in the UK of PC Gamer UK, and there may be a promise of a US versus UK match in the near future. So, Dan, I'm encouraging you to train to carry the load of some of that. I'm working on getting that set up, and I've also been talking with Blizzard about getting someone from the development team on the podcast in the near future. So we'll look forward to that as well.
Excellent. Have you just jetted up the technology tree as fast as you can in some games? Like set up just a skirmish and see if you can just get to the top tier units?
You actually can't do skirmishes against AI at this point, unfortunately. Oh.
Well, actually, I think in the FAQ there is a way to do it. It's just not very easy. Yeah, you have to go through jump through a few hoops. They haven't made it easy.
So have you been able to get to the end game stuff or late game stuff?
I built some Ultralisks.
Yeah, I carved out a win last night as Terrans with some Thors and whatever the battle cruisers I think they are.
Yeah.
So the Thors sound hilarious actually. They gave it the Arnold Schwarzenegger voice and they're
yeah, that's the really big Terran mech.
Yeah.
Wow.
Is Blizzard just looking to test their server load and bandwidth at this point, or are they still play balancing?
I think it's both.
Yeah,
and they will certainly want to test their the BattleNet system. I mean that's brand new. That hasn't been tested outside of Blizzard up until this point, so they have to run that through its paces. And then also, they'll be looking at how people are, reacting to the initial balance they rolled out. It's different even from what I played at the last press event. So they're trying many different things, and they're not afraid to change it.
Yeah, I think they're just trying to gather mass, aggregate a mass of data at this point about wins and losses and factions and units produced and, who goes where on what map with like heat maps and things like that. But I've got to say, it's been a completely smooth beta. There's been no downtime or whatever. There's been no connection issues or bugs that I've heard about or noticed. So
it's more polished than most launch games at the
time. Oh, of course. Considering they took maybe 6 or more months than when they said it would originally come out, but yeah. That's Blizzard, of course. All right, so the other big news to come out this week is, of course, Civilization 5 announced. We don't have a terrible amount of details on it, other than it is being produced by Firaxis, the original Civ developer that you know and love. It's going to introduce a hex-based system, I guess.
Before we get a bunch of hate mail, I mean, technically, Civ was originally developed by MicroProse with Sid Meier there, but he took the IP with him to Firaxis and 2K.
Yes.
Yeah. Don't send us hate mail.
It's the same team by heart. I actually love those MicroProse guys for Mech Commander and other reasons, but we have seen a few screenshots, and I don't know if we have any general thoughts. I mean, it's certainly Civilization 5, right?
The things they do with those games get so complex. It's really going to be hard to say if it's going to be a better game than Civ 4 until it's a lot further along than it is. But I mean the stuff they added in if you look at Civ 3 compared to Civ 4, it's exponentially more complex. So if they're planning to make another leap like that, it's huge. And going from squares to hexes is huge.
Two more directions that you can move, I guess, right? Or
well, you can always move diagonally. So you can always move in 6 directions. But
I see.
It could change stuff. I'm not sure how yet.
Cool. Well, we will have a preview of Civilization 5 going into our 200th issue. But it's funny. I was talking with some of our other colleagues on Twitter, and Eric and I were talking about this week, some funny win conditions that we would like them to introduce in Civ 5. And one of the ones I liked, somehow fostering a situation where Sid Meier is born in your domain, and he goes on to produce Civ 5 or Civilization game, and then you enter into this infinite feedback loop of you're playing that game, and then he's produced within that game. And kind of a similar one I think Eric came up with was... I'll let you explain it, Eric. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, you play Civ, and eventually your people discover that they are in a virtual world, so they break it. It basically turns into the Matrix, and then your computer shuts down.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa.
That's cool. How advanced the AI has become, you know?
I mean, literally, if you could find a way to, retain that save information, but, turn off the game, your citizens rebelled against you. I think that'd be.
I love this idea. Like, trying to keep your citizens from becoming like aware of that you're their god.
Exactly.
Wow.
Like using certain philosophy and entertainment, or like, I don't know. Yeah, that'd be ridiculous. I mean, kind of unrealistic to, and unbalancing potentially, but fun to think about.
Well, in Civ, you're not exactly a god. You're just immortal.
Close enough.
You become self-aware and put him in a little Zion and flush it every few years.
So what you guys are talking about is a black and white 3. So slightly different game.
So on the topic of me being ashamed that I haven't played enough Civilization, I sort of got this idea a couple days ago of, there are so many PC games out there, and it's bound that even us, you know, the most dedicated hardcore PC gamers in the world, not to toot our own horn, but that we've missed a few of the big important ones. And in order to get it, to encourage us to maybe go back and revisit some of those, I asked everybody to think of a game that they hadn't played that they know someone else on the podcast has played. And get that person or the other people to pitch them to go back and revisit that game. So in other words, to sort of say why we should go back and invest our time to play that game.
Is there a factor of time that needs to be taken into account here, or can it be?
That's not bad.
Or can it be? Yeah. You know, a game that was just last holiday that we never got to.
Oh, it can be any time, but maybe a better factor of time is you only have 30 seconds to convince us.
Or I meant like, you know, time that it came out, I guess.
How old school of a game does it have to be? Right?
It can be It can be as old as needs to be. That's fine.
Okay.
I wanna, you know, as I'm ashamed to say, and I've said it before, that I started Mass Effect and I didn't like it, and I put it away years ago, and that was a blow it, because now I'm on my third playthrough of Mass Effect 2. So that makes almost four times I played the series. And look what happened just a few months ago. I started Dragon's Age, and I played it for I spent like 45 minutes creating my character, played it for maybe an hour. And I was like, I don't like these controls. I'm not getting into this. And I just turned it off and never went back. And everybody loved it.
Whew, that's tough. Yeah.
Just gonna convince me of nothing, huh?
Dragon Age. So, I think. So you only played for what amount of time? You thought like you made the character
like an hour.
Okay,
maybe.
So I think
the guy to convince you would be Eric, who has played more than everybody else here.
Purple spiders.
Yeah, but Eric, pick a voice.
Logan, what didn't you like about it though?
I just didn't get into it. You know, again, I didn't give it much time, but you know, I wandered around and all I had was a crummy little bow and arrow, and then a couple spiders ate me. And I was like, well, that's screwed up.
it's definitely fair to say, like, you don't feel necessarily empowered by the game until you really get your party together and assemble that for the first time and have four characters do a variety of things.
You know, I thought I felt like I was fighting him with one of those little cocktail umbrellas, you know?
Of course. So Eric, we'll let you take lead on this. What you got?
Where's the voice?
Voice.
All right. Will not listen to standard Eric voice. Anything you say in normal voice will be disregarded.
We'll go with Blood Elf. All right. So here's the deal, Logan.
wait. In this voice, first, before you do anything else, call Logan a jive turkey.
A jive turkey?
Yeah. To say, you jive turkey.
Sounds more like convenience store clerk elf.
Logan, you jive turkey. Say it.
Logan, you jive turkey.
Thank you.
Wow.
That just happened. Yes.
I didn't know how to follow that up.
Okay, here's what I'm going to say about Dragon Age. And it's the exact same thing I'll say. I told you about Mass Effect.
Can I have a Snickers and a pack of cigarettes right there? Thanks.
I don't know what convenience store you're going to, Logan.
The one in 7 Max, maybe.
All right, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It takes a while to get into the world. But once you do, it's incredibly rewarding.
Like, what do you mean by rewarding? Like, do I actually get cash?
You get in-game gold.
But I mean, like, you know, I know why Mass Effect's rewarding. You know, you get great stories, you get, you know, amazing characters, you get wit, you get good action.
And I would argue that Dragon Age has all the same things. Once you get four party members, you get banter going, you get great combat, you get cool loot, awesome locations, and great storytelling. It's all there.
Okay.
It sounds like you're just still kind of stuck in the origins, and I love the origins. They're super cool, but it's not the whole game. I would encourage you to get out into the world.
Yeah, I mean, no, not even the origins. I was like at the origin of the origins. I mean, I'll admit it. I didn't, you know, I walked like maybe, you know, half a mile and then fighters ate me.
Eric, what origin should he pick for his first place?
I turned off the voice.
That I can't hear you.
Who's that? All I remember is that my character looked like Sean Cassidy.
I would encourage, let's see, for you, knowing you, I would think
City. Sean Cassidy.
All right, fine. Just for Dan, I'll turn something on.
I don't ask for much.
Here, Gnome.
Thank you.
Oh, no.
Now the gnome will tell you which origin to pick.
Anything but the gnome.
Actually, the gnome just sounds like a bad Skype connection.
Please.
Oh, all right. I can't do this.
You will do it. You will do it and you will
sounds
like it.
Sounds like somebody is strangling a hamster. This headset is technology.
Play City Elf.
Speak, gnome. Speak.
Mandatory WoW headsets for everybody from now on.
All right. So we got to move on. Eric's pitch is play City Elf. Get to where you got
City Elf is what
a full
you said.
Party
City
of characters. Okay. Get them talking. Right. And see what you think, Logan.
I think that another a key to Dragon Age's success is if you can kind of like let your nerd flag fly and role play a little bit. As if you were the race that you're playing, because there's a lot of
I'm down with that, no problem.
Yeah, there's a lot of racial politics and stuff in that game, and it's cool if you kind of feel what your character's going through in a way.
Okay,
and that will be really easy for you, Logan, because you're a huge racist.
Exactly. You know, it's not a racist if you get tired of being put down by the white man. That's not racism.
Yeah, so you should definitely be an elf in that case.
That is totally not racism. Yeah. You know. Just because I'm trying to lift the white man's boot off my chest does not make me a racist. So yes, I will play Dragon Age again and soon, and then let you know what I thought about Whitey's little game.
Terrific. All right, let's reverse it a little bit then. And Eric, what's your game that you need to be pitched on to go back and play?
I thought about this long and hard, and it's a game I hear about all the time. I have never played System Shock 2.
Sounds like Logan has some convincing to do.
why did you stop playing it? Was it because...
Yeah, I never started playing it. It sounded interesting. It sounded... it's supposed to be horrifying, which I love.
You gave me a graphic novel and you said it was really scary, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, this I'm telling you, System Shock 2 is a truly unnerving game, and it's not even scary in the way that like the first Fear was scary, where it had its shock moments and it had its violent moments and it had its surreal blood on the ceiling moments. It's not even like that, although all those elements are there. It's more that the game develops a creeping. A creeping sense of fear that just gathers around you. It's very, very claustrophobic, even when you're wandering around.
Of being surveilled, right?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And you really do feel as if you're being menaced throughout the entire last two-thirds of the game, regardless of what is happening at any time. And that's the amazing thing is even when nothing's happening in System Shock 2, about halfway through the game and beyond, you still feel like you're being preyed on. How are them apples?
It sounds awesome.
And here's more for you. You know, it is a very old game, but you can download not only a high-res texture pack that increases the resolution of the textures, but there's also an improved AI pack. And all you have to do is just Google System Shock 2 texture pack, and you'll be able to find the website where you can download it for free. And, you know, it kind of gives everything a fresh coat of paint and makes it look even better.
Is this on GOG?
That is not on GOG,
no.
Sadly. You know, and I think like eBay, it's really expensive on eBay. Even used copies started about $35.
You've got to have a copy on the shelf here somewhere, don't you?
Yeah, we've got probably one in the library somewhere.
We'll have to do some digging.
Yeah. Well, that might be my weekend then. System Shock 2.
Very good.
It is absolutely galvanizing, yeah.
Jeremy, I'm curious what your game you want to play but need some convincing might be.
There's so many, but I guess the standout would have to be KOTOR, which it got such rave reviews, Game of the Year awards all around, and I didn't play it for more than about an hour because I'm not into the combat system, which, unlike Mass Effect, it's very detached. It's just more like WoW, where you sort of hit fire and then you let your guy fight for you. What does that game hold? You know, past the first hour that's so worth playing right now.
Yeah, it's
well, the combat in that game. Sorry to interrupt. The combat in that game is very similar to Dragon Age. It's kind of the same idea where you're controlling a party, and you can pause and give orders. The interface is significantly different, but the principles are very similar.
Oh, I was just gonna say it's actually built on the Wizards of the Coast Star Wars Dungeons and Dragons game. I mean, it's those rules, so it is very similar to like a Neverwhere Nights or a Dragon Age in that matter.
Right. And as for what it has to offer, I would call it the best Star Wars storytelling since the original trilogy. And maybe there's some Timothy Zahn novels that might be more, you know, some better storytelling. He's the only Star Wars author I've read that I could stand. He was actually really good, but like by far the best Star Wars interactive storytelling you'll find.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely relate to Jeremy's situation. I mean, in a world where Mass Effect exists, right, where something is simultaneously gameplay is satisfying, characters are satisfying, but also the presentation, right? I think KOTOR is missing that element of presentation, at least by today's standards, after seeing Mass Effect, right?
I mean, it's an old game, so I mean, mm-hmm. That's going to be true of any of these things.
Yeah, it's not a fault, but it's just a reality, I think. And
this may be naive, but it's hard for me to imagine that Mass Effect will look dated in a couple of years, just because you know you a really great game. You kind of almost look past the graphics.
Yeah, and to some extent that's true, but you do have to get over that initial hump and get into get true. Really attached to the game before that kicks in, at least for me.
Oh yeah, no, that's true. I agree with that.
So yeah, I think it's definitely accurate to say you have to want to pursue some of that Star Wars storyline, Jeremy, something that's, you know, predates the original movies, but it still kind of really builds the universe very well, and the combat system, which I mean, it's weird to say, but I mean, blasters and lightsabers almost kind of lend themselves well to like the queuing game mechanics, the queuing style of combat mechanics that are similar to Dragon Age, almost more than swords and sorcery do for me for some reason. But it's just the way they animate. Anyway,
and they practically are swords and sorcery, just with, you know, different skin on them. But yeah,
sure. All right, cool, good feedback, guys. All right, Dan. In that case. Let's have yours.
Well, these, except for System Shock, these have all been RPG so far, but I like the one that's been on my list of games that I need to play, and just I've said this before, actually, I've listed it as a game that I mean to get around to, but just haven't had the time or I need some incentive right now. The Witcher. And Andy, I know you're a big fan, so sell me.
Okay.
Go get him.
Did you play Dragon Age at all?
I've played about maybe 10 hours of it total.
Okay. Well, in the origin story, at least, and I'm sure you've heard all about the choices that Dragon Age presents to you with no clear good or bad way to you know, come up with the answer or, you know, to do your choice. There's no easy way to determine what's going to be the good way, what's going to be the bad way, and what the consequences are going to be. And I think that they actually took their cues on that from The Witcher, because The Witcher is just full of these choices of whether to save someone that's a witch from a mob, this is one of the early decisions in the game, or to kill her with the mob and help them, and the consequences that happen later because of that and stuff. And so,
is there a way to determine whether or not the witch floats?
it's pretty much like that, you know. But it's so there. I think they took a lot of the stuff from that, which is cool because that game is just full of kind of a foreboding atmosphere that's darker and more, you know, it's more like adult. And I think Dragon Age took that from that game because it's definitely an RPG. Through and through, The Witcher is, and with choices that are neither good nor bad. It's just bad all the time. Everything's bad.
Yeah. And what's the combat like in that game? That's one thing I was never really clear on. Is it action-y or is it pausey?
It's not pausey, and there's what you do is you have different stances for your sword play because you're very proficient with your melee, and you don't really have a choice in that matter. And what you do is you either have a fast stance, a heavy stance, or a medium stance, you know, and depending on that, that's how you do your attacks. And you can also use magi, and that's like basically the magic in the game. And so, yeah, the combat ends up being really fun once you get into your groove and figure out how to use the different stances.
Can I just make the point that if anyone else had used the word posse, Dan would have said his dignity was offended.
I disagree. I am in favor of adding Y to.
I am certain that if anyone else had used that word, you would have railed against them.
See, this is all part of your racism, Logan.
Terrific. All right. So Andy, I had to put in this black and white situation, but the combat, even though it's fundamentally different than Dragon Age, better or worse than Dragon Age, or more satisfying or less satisfying?
Less satisfying overall, okay. I'd say. But the storytelling is very satisfying in The Witcher. And certainly it's a cool world, like the world you want to learn more about, because there's a lot of more fantastical elements, I think, even more than Dragon Age.
And I think I'm just going to jump in here. The thing I loved so much about The Witcher was that the world is like, it's grim, and it's very Eastern European in the sense that it's kind of like run down and beat down, which is awesome because even Dragon Age has like some shiny happiness elements in it. The Witcher is just so gritty in its storytelling, and I loved it.
Plus, Geralt is just a badass, the main character.
That's true.
Cholesterol?
I think his name's Geralt. Yeah.
Geralt. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
and thanks, by the way, Eric, for the continued racism against Eastern Europeans.
Yeah, what's up with that?
there's a very distinct game.
Yeah. All right, so my
just
turn.
Call them savages. Go.
They make an interesting article, by the way. So my turn, and this is going to be a really daunting one that probably no one but Eric would want to jump in on. World of Warcraft. I've played...
What? 20... Oh, you changed yours from what you said was before the show.
I did.
I was all ready to sell you on Sins of the Solar Empire, and you changed it.
I did.
Sleight of hand.
I was toying with that one.
I played 20 minutes of it, and it's a job to me that I don't want to take up, but should I?
I can fully understand where you're coming from. There was a long time
Wait. If he's going to sell you on WoW, he has to use the plus. Come on.
Is there like a salesman or like a auction house guy in that headset somewhere? That's like
I'm sorry, Eric, but use it or lose it. That's the classic rule that has been with us for years.
There's not Tarin. We can go with dwarfs.
No, there's valuable recursion here that we need to take advantage
old
of.
Old hag.
Do you want village elder?
No, that's. I mean, we need something at least comprehensible. Is Torin just like very cow-like or what?
But what a Yeardley Smith.
I mean, does it intersperse moos or something? I don't know.
Just pick one at random. I don't care.
Yeah. the Torin are not present.
They're Chesil.
We could go with human female. I'm not sure I've ever tested that one.
Oh wow.
Do it.
Is this technically drag?
Come on, Erica.
All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, Erica Belsas, take it away.
So, World of Warcraft.
I got $10. Because we could have a good time.
That's terrible, Logan.
Just let him talk. We're not going to get through this. Just let him talk.
Come on, okay. Come on. Just okay. Everyone shut up and let Erica talk.
World of Warcraft. I was with you, Evan. It almost seems like a chore. And for me, what really got me into World of Warcraft was my friends. And I think that's what you have, is friends to share the giant world with. Azeroth is, I mean, it's daunting, but it's incredible. And if you can take Azeroth, if you can, I would say the hardest part is the first 20 levels. And then once you get a mount, and once you started exploring this world, and once you started...
Sorry. Take it away, lady. Sorry.
Well, and once you started really getting into the lore and the culture of this world, it's a place you want to be. It's a place you want to keep leveling up and keep exploring new dungeons with your friends, which is a blast.
Okay.
I can't take it anymore.
That's great. So the one serious follow-up question to that is, I mean, I hear a lot about like the add-ons, like the Quest Finder and whatever it's called, that people use to get through the game faster, probably to level faster, to improve the UI. Would I need to install any of those to have a good time, or would it really be necessary to seek those things out and take the time to install them and sort of customize my experience to play WoW?
No, you don't need to.
Okay.
They would make the experience easier, is what I'll say. It's pretty daunting, and the UI isn't exactly right. Blizzard's made a lot of really good strides. This latest patch has made quest tracking way better. But there are add-ons out there that are really helpful. It can be daunting at first, but there's great websites to help you with that.
All right, Erica, fantastic. I think your mom just called. She's outside to pick you up.
And I'd just like to say,
Eric,
next time you meet a girl in World of Warcraft, it's not a girl.
they have the technology.
That's a great insight, though. You know, if you walk into a World of Warcraft and expect to have a fantastic time, you know, it's something that I imagine you get drawn into because you're with friends, because it, you know, it's a very social experience, and it makes it more immersive. It makes it more entertaining. It makes it more spontaneous and enjoyable. Whereas if you, you know, I think a lot of people just wander in and go, I don't get it. What's the big deal? You know? Yeah. So you'd go and do these quests, blah, blah, blah.
That's absolutely true. Like I live with Josh Augustine. That's no secret.
Does his fiance know? I didn't think he was living with a girl.
That's scandalous.
Incrimination.
All right. But I mean, you should hear our banter, because all it is like, oh my gosh, have you seen this new instance in Ghostlands? Have you been on top of this mountain? It's so cool. We talk about WoW so much, and that's really what it is. It's sharing that world, sharing that experience. And I mean, and there's the whole combat and raiding, and if you're a stats guy, you'll love WoW. I mean, it's full of stats, but it's more than that. It's a world.
Does it drive Josh crazy when you dry your hose over the shower curtain?
Can you hear yourself, Eric? Is there a monitor?
No, that's part of the problem here. I cannot hear myself.
Oh my gosh, that's probably better. It's so awesome.
Yeah, you'll hear it later.
That's terrific.
Very good.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
Let's get this train moving again as quickly as possible. So, resuming with Andy.
Okay, here's an easy one then. It's pretty much past gone me, and I'm probably not gonna pick it up again. Left 4 Dead 2.
Oh.
Oh wow.
Huh.
Why would you not want to pick it up again?
Yeah.
I have a lot of other games to play, and I don't know if I have four friends that are gonna be able to play with me.
You'll need three.
That's what I meant.
here and there.
So would you be more interested in competitive multiplayer or just getting through the content, like the new levels and the new weapons?
Getting through the content and just playing it with a group, a consistent
okay.
group.
Yeah, that's not too hard. That's like, you know, a few nights of the week, and you can get through that. Hell, I'd play with you. I haven't played it in a while either.
And it's well worth.
I'm definitely in.
Yeah.
And what?
And it's worth it to go back through it and not.
Oh yeah,
it is. Yeah, I mean, if for any reason, just to see like how they utilize some of the feedback in terms of level design and weapon design.
And the new special indicator, you know, for going from Left 4 Dead 1 into Left 4 Dead 2, it's completely unpredictable. Mm-hmm. You don't see a lot of the new attacks coming, so it's totally fresh again.
And for me, I don't know what they call the system where you can blow off like limbs individually.
Dismemberment.
Dismemberment, like their gore system is so incredibly interactive this time around that it's almost like an entirely new experience. I just love it.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a constant source of feedback, and that's probably the most, I don't know, over time, that's the thing that keeps it fresh. If that's a pun, I'm not sure. But
yeah.
I think, I mean, you've got to think that your first playthrough of those Left 4 Dead levels is going to be the most valuable experience with them, in my opinion. So yeah. Find the right people.
Whoop. Yeah, I don't think you'll have a problem like finding people to play with you. I mean, I wouldn't, but you should be able to. Sorry, I just wanted to be mean. It's the end of the week, and I'm feeling very edgy. Sorry.
Yeah, no problem. All right, cool. So if you guys like that segment, feel free to send us a question of your own with a game that you need to be pitched on. Hopefully we played it, and I'm sure one of us would have. And we'll get that on the air, and just let us know if you want to repeat this in the future. It's been a little fun. So with that, let's transition into some of your lovely questions that you sent over the past week.
Play as or against Napoleon Bonaparte, the greatest military tactician in history, leading thousands of troops on an unparalleled bid for power in this newest chapter of the award-winning Total War series, Sega's Napoleon Total War, in stores February 23rd. Rated T for teen.
Hey, PC Gamer crew. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I'll try to make it quick, under a minute. There hasn't been much talk from you guys about Battlefield Bad Company 2 for the PC. Battlefields, for me, have always been awesome games, and I'm super psyched to find out what this one's all about. But I am watching my money, and there is a lot of games out, so I was wondering what you guys think, or if you've heard anything or played it or anything. I haven't heard nothing from you guys. So good luck with the podcast, and I'll be listening. Bye.
Yeah, unfortunately, EA hasn't really given us a ton of good opportunities to get sort of dig into the multiplayer, which is definitely going to be the focus of Bad Company 2. I mean, DICE over in Sweden are known for their multiplayer efforts in the previous Battlefield games. We have been playing the beta a little bit. Unfortunately, it's just one level and one mode. In general, I mean, Eric, you played a little bit of it, right? What did you think?
At first, I had kind of come off playing so much Modern Warfare 2 that I was approaching it entirely wrong. It's not a game where you can just like run in, shoot like 15 headshots all the way across the battlefield with your giant machine gun, and then stab a bunch of people. It's not that game. It's way more Battlefield, which is awesome once I got used to it. You work as a team, you kind of move forward.
You're a soldier, not a superhero, I think is the main difference.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's kind of refreshing. I love the destructible terrain. Like, if there's a guy behind the wall in front of you, shoot it till you made a hole, and then shoot the guy. That it's just brilliant to me.
In its simplicity.
Yeah. As far as the beta was concerned, what I was playing, I wasn't a huge fan of that snow level. It was a little too open for me. I got sniped a lot, and the sniper rifles are a little different. You know, the bullets actually take some time getting to their destination.
Yeah, they measure drop as well.
Yeah, so I was terrible with them, but other people weren't, which was, it got a little frustrating, but it's a fantastic game. Yeah,
I'm curious to see how the full version turns out. I mean, they definitely want to be distinct from Modern Warfare 2, in that, like we were saying, you know, soldier versus superhero. But at the same time, I mean, they introduced like their own progression system for unlocking weapons. There's things that sort of resemble perks called specializations that you unlock later on that, you know, again, aren't as overpowered as running. Well, actually, you can run forever in the game. Every character can run forever in Battlefield Bad Company 2. But those are in place. And one of the things I noticed is how aggressively they balance the vehicles. I mean, the turret on the tank rotates. It's probably the slowest rotating thing I've ever used in a game. Likewise for some of the turrets and whatnot. And I guess that all kind of goes toward, hopefully, you know, we need to see it in action much more. But a game where one player can't just dominate the battlefield and get 23 kills in a row and, you know, just completely turn the tide. It has to be a team effort. It has to be some semblance of strategy and thinking. So if that's the case, we'll be interested in it. I mean, obviously our biggest concern is that this is a multi-platform game. Is it really going to preserve the kind of like precision and customization and, you know, things we associate with very PC multiplayer games? We'll see.
I'm personally kind of in love with it, with anything that has terrain deformation. I just love that. I mean, it's very similar to the feedback you get from the zombies in Left 4 Dead, where you shoot them in the arm and the arm falls off. Nothing to me is more immersion breaking than shooting a flimsy little shack with a missile. And having, when the smoke clears, it's completely unscathed. I mean, for me, it's just incredibly rewarding to knock buildings down. And like, if somebody's hiding behind a flimsy bench and I shoot the bench should go away. You know, that, so I approve of that aspect of it.
I think, though, sometimes when you do shoot people in a limb, like, sometimes it will, like, blow off. I'm pretty sure. But if anyone has done it, call in, please, and tell us. Because I think it does happen more often than you think, but I'm not sure.
Huh. Maybe only when you're using the 50 cal Barrett.
Could be.
Yes, indeed.
As there seen many in Miami factors. Vice.
All right, do we have time for one more really quick? Maybe, sure. Sorry. It's really late, sorry.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, this is Bobby from Cuna, Idaho. Probably the only place in the world whose school mascot is a caveman.
Awesome.
The Prince of Persia movie is coming out pretty soon, and it got me thinking about game movies, and I don't think games have been represented very well on the big screen. I think there are some games that would be conducive to it, but instead we end up with movies like Tomb Raider and Dungeon Siege and Doom and Mario Brothers. Yeah, it's kind of unfortunate. So what are your favorite and least favorite game movies, and what games do you think would make good movies? I personally am waiting for Half-Life.
I don't think that's a fair question, because how can you have a favorite game movie when they're all crap?
Yeah, they are all crap, aren't they?
Well, yeah, no, I mean, Max Payne was the most recent one.
I didn't think that the first, while it was no masterpiece, that the first Tomb Raider was all that bad.
It was awful.
It was. No, I didn't say it was great. I didn't think it was all that bad. The second one was a horror beyond imagination, but the first one had some nice sequences, and I think Angelina Jolie did a really good job.
They call those sequences now, huh? I really like Angelina Jolie's sequences. But no, not a good movie.
I would actually.
Okay, wait. I have a question for you, Logan.
Okay.
Tell me the plot of that movie.
Her father had hid this time. This object that had been broken into several pieces, and he, can you do that voice thing, Eric? That was really cool. Change your, that was really funny, the one you did last time.
Yeah. No plot whatsoever. It's a completely nonsensical pile of crap.
Okay. So, Vito, that's fine.
Well, you know what? I do have a favorite video game movie. Resident Evil 1 was not a bad zombie movie.
Yes. I was going to mention that.
It had some parts, though. Like, there was a couple parts where it cut away to something, and it, like, dropped an entire, like, sequence. Like, it was just really weird directing sometimes.
It was weird. And it was not a great movie. It was not even necessarily a very good movie. But it was, you know, as a zombie movie goes, not a bad zombie movie.
Yeah. The one to follow. It was like rougher in the sense of, you know, a little goyer than I thought it'd be, a little darker.
Right.
And they've made three of them, and I think they're actually making a fourth one or another one.
It's just going downhill. My God.
Because they're actually making money off rentals or DVDs or something. I don't know, but here they come.
Yeah. Okay. So what should be a movie? I mean, Mass Effect is the obvious answer.
I was thinking about that today. I was like, I was like, how would I turn Mass Effect into a cinematic experience?
See, for me, it would be Dragon Age before. Mass Effect is cool, but you affect the universe so severely that for them to make it into a movie, unless it completely is at some other point in time besides, like, Commander Shepard, it would almost be sacrilege for me because it's not the universe that I know and love at that point.
But it is, though, because there's so much science behind it. Like, that's almost one of the cool parts of the universe is just the Codex, as it's called. You know, like, all of that information creates a really compelling universe to be in, and so you tell a story within that universe. Even if it is Shepard's, I think it would still be awesome.
To me, what's one of the things that's kind of cool about Mass Effect is, you know, you're talking to somebody else, and they will tell you about their story that they had, and that is valuable, and that's you know, not as good as playing it yourself, but it's kind of cool to hear how other people did it, and this would be a similar thing. It's watching, basically hearing about somebody else's playthrough in Mass Effect, because it's a cool universe. I'd love to hear about, you know, an adventure in that universe that was similar to mine but different.
It's pretty similar, I mean, in spirit to how Firefly was going. I mean, not really, like, closely, but, like, the like, moral dilemmas and stuff that are faced and, like, kind of the missions that they go on. And if you just, like, scienced up Firefly, like, cleaned it up a little bit from the Frontier Western and put aliens in it, like, that would be so awesome. And that would be fun.
Stop there.
I think it's almost asking for trouble if you're taking a property and converting into a movie. And I mean, obviously it would be ideal if BioWare had, you know, tons of creative control over that, but that's never going to be the case. And the movie studio is going to interpret it to, I mean, this is the core problem with game movies, right? They assume people that are fans of the game are going to see it no matter what. So they make the game to accommodate a general audience. Would that happen with Mass Effect? I don't know.
Actually, I think games are still perceived to be something that 12 to 14 year old guys only they play. So they it seems like every game movie, even including the first Resident Evil movie, seems targeted toward, you know, very, very young men. And there's no complexity to it. There's no finesse. There's no craft. And, you know, it doesn't matter what the subject matter is. They just keep flattening it out. And until they get out of that mindset that they're targeting, you know, very, like, preteen boys, they're always going to be
preteen.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like their target is such young mentalities, you know.
Yeah.
So,
but I think
the set to BioShock though. Ooh.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that a story like Mass Effect, and it would be difficult for them to kind of shoehorn that into a really young mindset movie. And I think that it is the type of story that could kind of break that mold, because it is such a mature story to begin with. I mean, all the ones that have been turned into movies up to this point have, and the games themselves have been marketed at a younger set. So, I mean, it kind of made sense for them to take, you know, the target, you know, take the material that was targeted at a younger crowd, not uniformly, but there was a lot there, like a lot of that audience was that younger crowd, and make a movie that was targeted at them. But with Mass Effect, it is a mature game, and it would, you know, the story would be suited for a movie focusing, you know, with a broader kind of take on it, more mature take.
I don't know. I mean, I kind of disagree. I think that in order to be, I mean, just because of the evidence we've had so far of how capable movie studios are of executing their video games as source material, you almost have to pick something that lets them interpret it a little bit more, that doesn't have such a rigid plot and characters and story, like, I don't know, Diablo, Portal, The Sims. The Sims is having a movie made. Is that still happening? I don't know.
There was talk of that. I don't know. I mean, that sounds like a terrible movie waiting to happen.
World of Warcraft is going to happen, though.
And yeah, then, allegedly.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
That's going to be weird to
see. I kind of think that it's when they interpret things is where they go wrong. I almost think that an adventure game would be a better adaptation for studios because they just can follow the story and pick up on the strongest elements. You know, a game like Siberia, which, you know, would have magnificent sets and automatons, you know, and giant mechanical factories. But at the same time, a very, very intimate human story.
Yeah. And I think along those lines, I've got a perfect one. Okay. Alan Wake. I mean, you can go to the movie theater, enjoy it in your very intimate setting, right, where it's meant designed to be enjoyed. It won't be released on DVD because you're not supposed to watch it on the couch. You have to have that full experience with popcorn because it's meant to be watched. Playlist Eric.
Okay.
Voice.
Yep. Voice?
Yeah.
All right. Do we want The Orphan?
We don't care.
Yes, I like The Orphan.
Pick something at random.
That sounds good.
All right. this week, in anticipation of Assassin's Creed 2, I installed the first one. I've never played it before.
Aren't you a little young to be playing an M-rated game?
Yeah, what's up with that?
My parents abandoned me, and so I was exposed to very horrible things already.
God.
I don't know what to say. I can't hear this voice.
Why did we go down this road once more?
It's kind of lost its thunder a little bit.
It was the only road to go down, really.
That's true.
Better him than me.
I'm enjoying it so far. I've heard
how many hours in are you?
Probably five.
So innocent.
Yeah. No, that's actually right about the point where it'll start to get boring. Am I wrong? You guys have played this game, right? After about that point, you've played everything there is to play, and then you're just replaying.
Yeah, but it's so fun to play. You dive off buildings and.
Yeah, there's a limit to how much fun that is after a while. I think that after you've played about 5 hours of that game, you've played all you need to play.
Wait a minute. Okay, my mind just totally blanked. What game are we talking about?
Assassin's Creed.
Right. Gotcha. No, yeah, I'm with Dan. 5 hours and it's yeah, done it.
But, if you're enjoying it, by all means, continue to play.
No, don't.
End of discussion. All right. Also, can you please say, sir, may I please have some more?
Sir, may I please have some more?
Does it even give you an accent?
Really good.
Or did you?
It passes the test.
Whoa!
Wow!
Turing test passed.
That was astonishing.
Eric, did you just add a British accent, or was that the software?
Yeah.
I don't think I did.
Wow.
Subconsciously. All right.
Oh my God, I'm fusing with him.
Jeremy.
Yes.
Other than your incredible Star Trek pinball machine, which we're all so envious of.
Right.
Yeah, I play a lot of pinball now, and I haven't talked about that on the podcast before, but I do have a pinball fetish. But the real whole reason I wanted to be on the podcast today is because I've been playing a game I always meant to play and never got to, and that is LucasArts' The Secret of Monkey Island. And if it weren't for the iPhone version, I probably wouldn't be doing this. So I got to give props to the people who made the iPhone port. It's excellent. It's got great graphics, which you can swap between old school and new school by just swiping your fingers. And it does this nice dissolve between the old school and new school. Wow. It's got all new sound. Every single line of text is voiced. And it's got ambient sound, and it's fantastic. And I'm like 20% through now, having just downloaded it yesterday, and loving it. It's a great game that I always meant to play.
That almost sounds like the authoritative version. Damn, that sounds great.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, the PC remake has the same benefits to it.
Yeah, but it's not portable.
It must be the PC version scaled down, because I've read the same things about the PC version. It's an excellent version, but I highly recommend it. And so actually I was gonna say during that section when we're talking about old games that we never played, what other LucasArts games must I play once I'm done with this one?
Pretty much all of them, I think.
Grimm.
Yeah. I mean
Grimm
number one.
Grimm's first, yeah.
Grimm's the best though, so maybe you should save it for last.
Loom? It's Loom's LucasArts, right?
Yes, it is.
Yep.
Ask me about Loom.
I love Loom.
I was more of a Sierra guy, so I never got into the LucasArts adventure games, but I'm going to check these out now, I think.
All right, Dan Stapleton, I know you're up to your eyeballs, as aforementioned in reviews, but...
Yeah, I guess I'll talk a little bit about Supreme Commander 2, which I've gotten through now, and that's I'm enjoying it a lot. I mean, I'll say, you know, up front, the story of the single player is not good, but the action is a lot better in that they have they've brought the experimental units, which are really kind of the real appeal of that game. It's just the over the top giant monstrous robots and, you know, and giant gunships and all kinds of crazy units. They brought those into the early part of the game, so it really adds some good flavor to the game. And I also just can't get enough of the strategic zoom, being able to zoom all the way out and just see everything on the battlefield at once. And then I jump into the StarCraft II beta and I can't zoom out, and I just spin my mouse wheel, like it makes this noise and nothing happens. And it's very frustrating, but yeah.
Freak.
I've heard some of those complaints, with people that are similarly concerned about that. Andy Bauman.
Oh yeah. I've been playing Mass Effect 2 every night. And, I think, has everybody played it?
Yep. Well, and all the listeners may not have, so don't spoil anything.
No, I'm not going to spoil anything. I just think that it's everything and more that the first game was, and I'm loving every second of it. Yep. And it's like it's basically like going to cinematography school. Especially I've noticed that they've gotten a little lazier with the shots as the story is progressing. But certainly the first like maybe 3 hours or 2 hours, and when you're on the Omega system. The cinematography is just phenomenal with the lighting. Like, I'm always constantly like, what are they rating what are they rating this film at?
Seriously. It blew me away when they split that planet right in half, you know? I was just like, no way. my God.
Spoilers.
Man.
No.
That's one thing you can rely on us on. Mass Effect spoilers every week.
But yeah, and like some of the stuff they're doing with lighting is like super impressive, I think. Like, yes. Yeah. Anyway.
Okay, so
You say it's everything in the first one and more, the loss of the RPG inventory and everything doesn't bother you at all?
No, because what it does is it allows you to have more meaningful experiences quicker. It kind of does feel weird when you're like ushered to the point of interest like super quickly. You kind of just go through a shooting gallery and then you end up at the talkie part and then do the talkie part, and then that's kind of like what it is. But I mean, that was all the best parts of the first one anyway, and so of like eliminating the ride on the Mako up to that point and all that other crap kind of just streamlines it more anyway. So
All right, so fast question: Renegade, Paragon, or boring middle neutral guy?
Whoa, boring middle neutral guy.
Yes.
What's wrong with being the middle neutral guy? That's like
extreme, man.
I'm the
you're boring.
I'm the Malcolm Reynolds of freaking Mass Effect.
What makes a man turn neutral? Or are we just born with a heart full of neutrality?
I'll do the tough decisions when it matters and I'm protecting my crew. But overall, I'm a really nice commander.
Male or female?
Yawn.
Female. Yawn.
Damn right.
Yeah.
Excellent. Logan.
Why was I last?
I'm last.
No, but you called everyone else and then me last.
Because you have the best. You have the best games you've been playing, and you're going
to... So why didn't, at the beginning of the podcast, why didn't you call me, why didn't you announce my name last when I was second to last?
My methodology will remain secret.
Logan, just stop being a jive turkey and...
I've been playing Bioshock 2, but you know how there's like always like a game that you kind of go back to all the time? For me, that game is called Tornado Jockey. And it's from Wild Tangent, and I think you can play it free on their site, and you just pay if you want to download it. And it's just, you have to play it with headphones, and you play a tornado. And at first you start in a rural area, and you just have to destroy everything that you can, and they give you all these targets to hit. But if you hit an electrical tower, you get temporary abilities to like throw lightning at airplanes that are surrounding you. When you hit water, you can send waves, and then eventually you end up like in cities and you're tearing up skyscrapers. It's just orgasmic.
So it can be like an elemental tornado with magic, basically.
Exactly.
I'm sold.
And you hoover everything up, and the sound is amazing. It's just everything's breaking apart and shattering, and oh man.
Now, Logan, I was going to ask you about that incredible cinematic experience called OMG Lasers Pew Pew Pew.
Oh, that's just amazing. But I don't want to spoil it for our readers when we do the feature story on it.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, because that is just something else. You can find it on my Twitter feed, Rock Legend. I've already Twittered. What is it? What's the full name?
OMG Lasers. pewpewpew.com.
Yeah, it's probably going to be one of the most influential games of 2010.
Probably our first 100%.
Yeah, I think it might be. So you want to be on the lookout for that. Again, if you can't find it, just check out my Twitter feed.
Perfect. As for myself, I've been playing the StarCraft II beta, of course. Looking forward to putting a bunch more matches into that over the weekend. And I don't know, I need to play Bioshock sometime. I don't know, it's kind of low priority for whatever reason. All right, guys, so we got to get out of here quickly so we can finish our lovely magazine, which you can subscribe to. I love getting things in my mailbox that I'm a hobbyist for. Head on over to PCGamer.com, fill in some information, we'll send it to you. And if you'd like to submit a question for next week, you can dial us up at 877-404-1337, extension 724, or just email us an MP3 question to PCGamerPodcast@gmail.com. On behalf of Evan Lotti, Jeremy Williams, Dan Stapleton, Logan Decker, and Eric Belsas, the multiracial drag queen intern, we'll see you guys next week. Have a great weekend.
I was having fun.
Sorry, Jeremy.
I was like about to vomit because I was laughing so hard.
Yeah. All right.
I'm glad to hear.